For our readings today, I have for us two covenants. And again, the idea that a covenant is a set of agreements that a group of people mutually agreed to hold for one another. It's how we choose to be together. And I have two covenants. One is the Scrooby Covenant, which was written by that same little band of pilgrims in that living room in such a long time ago in 1606. And the second is a covenant written by Alice Blair Wesley, a Unitarian Universalist minister, in 2002. And she calls it one version of our liberal covenant, because I think she and many of us would agree there is not one covenant, but one version that we can keep working with and trying to understand. The first, the 1606 Scrooby Covenant. We, as the Lord's free people, join ourselves into church estate in the fellowship of the gospel, to walk in all ways made known or to be made known unto us, according to our best endeavors, whatsoever it should cost us, the Lord assisting us. To walk together in all the ways known and yet to be made known to us, whatsoever it shall cost us. What a bold commitment to each other. And this one version of our liberal covenant. Though our knowledge is incomplete, our truth partial, and our love uneven, from our own experience and from the witness of our faith tradition, we affirm that new light is ever waiting to break through our individual hearts and minds to illumine the ways of humankind. We affirm that there is mutual strength in our willing cooperation and that the bonds of love can keep open the gates of freedom. Therefore, we pledge to walk together in the ways of truth and affection as best we know them now, or may learn them in days to come, that we and our children and our community may be filled, and that we may speak to the world with words and actions of peace and of goodwill.
Of our creation, where works of art breath and melodies consecrate the atmosphere.
Let this be a house of peace.
Let this be a house of peace.
Let this be a house of peace.
Let this be a house of prophecy. May vision for our children be our common theme.
Let this be our house of myth and lore and legend, our trove of ancient story and cradle of our tender dreams.
Let this be a house of peace.
Let this be our house of peace.
Let this be a house of peace.
Let this be our house of peace.
Let this be a house of peace.
Let this be our
house of peace.
Let this be our house of
peace. There's a lot of talk going on these days about whether religion in America is a good thing or bad thing or just a kind of in-between thing or a thing that you should really just run away from. There's been a lot of talk about whether faith is a good thing or a bad thing or an in-between thing or a thing to run very far away from. And this year for the sermon series, I try to do a sermon series every year and I try to pick something that will challenge me. This year I've decided to talk about religion in America and to try to look at those questions with honest eyes as a person who, well, is pretty religious and loves religion and thinks faith could do great things, but who also knows that it is a very complex time in our history and in our nation. We are simultaneously one of the most religious nations in the world and among the greatest profit makers that ever existed. When it comes to religion, the American people are this mix of fascinating dualities. We are faithful and we are secular. We are postmodern and positively medieval. We are both stunningly entrepreneurial and glaringly primitivist. Entirely new faiths have sprung up whole cloth from this soil. And yet millions and millions of people spend their lives in prayer trying to recapture what the apostles did 2,000 years ago. We believe in the kingdom of God, but we also believe with all of our hearts in the kingdom of America, formed by democracy and free enterprise rather than faithful adherence to any creed. We are an increasingly pluralistic society, yet the particular Judeo-Christian tradition that was brought to these shores by those pilgrims long ago is the sea in which we swim, the tide we fight against, or the current that carries us along. And before we just write off the whole messy business of religious pluralism and religious exclusivism and religious problems in America, it bears, I think, a more careful observation, and so to this year's sermon series, about which I am more than a little excited and quite a lot nervous. We'll look in this series at topics that range from these pilgrim beginnings to the Pentecostal revivals of the Great Awakening, to the birth of Mormonism and the rise of true religious pluralism and the acceptance of diverse spiritual paths. But today, we begin at the beginning. We start with a pilgrim story, a story that belongs uniquely to our tradition, this group of people who landed on these shores and set in motion all of the contradictions, atrocities, and miracles that comprise the American religious experience. They started the whole mess. These pilgrims were a subgroup of those folks we know as Puritans. The Puritans wanted to purify the Church of New England. They wanted to change it. They wanted to make it better. The Pilgrims wanted to get away from it, to separate entirely. They wanted out, and they found their way out by sailing across an ocean. They were that specific subsection of the Puritans who believed that all ties to the mothership might as well be cut. They believed that all connections to the hierarchical church should be abandoned. And it was they that landed in Plymouth all that time ago. Those Pilgrims determined that they would be self-governed. They determined that they would manage their own house. And because they determined that central aspect of the church would be the covenant between people rather than a creed, the Pilgrims brought to our tradition and to America two great gifts, congregationalism and covenant, and I'm going to explain those a little bit. That first, congregationalism. The word basically means that congregations govern themselves. They take care of their own business. They're autonomous and independent. They're not structured around a church hierarchy. They're their own folks. And there are, as you may guess, several American religious groups who maintain that original Pilgrim congregationalism. There are the Congregationalists, also known as the United Church of Christ. There are several groups within the Baptist tradition, and there is us, the Unitarian Universalists, self-governed and self-directed because the Pilgrim Church showed us how, and because, for better or for worse, they are the parent of us all. In Europe, the Pilgrims had experience enough with powerful church hierarchies to know that such concentrated authority could be easily twisted into oppression. And so, as one historian has said, they created in their earliest governing documents the pioneer formulation of the principle that a corporate body, that's us, is created by consent of its constituent members. The idea that a corporate body is created because the folks choose to create it. In a word, they created American democracy. The first democracy practiced in the colonies that would become the United States was the same congregationalism we practice here when all of us vote on the affairs of our congregational life. Our annual meeting, as chaotic and magnificent as it is, our annual meeting is the direct descendant of Puritan congregationalism. It is, quite literally, the earliest form of American democracy. As James Russell Lowell wrote, Puritanism, believing itself quick with the seed of religious liberty, laid without knowing it the seed of democracy. Democracy snuck up on them. When all they really wanted was to manage their own business without the affairs and the meddling of ecclesiastical hierarchy, when all they really wanted was to practice their faith as they saw fit, they laid the seeds for an entire nation's political and religious future. Which brings us to their second gift, covenant. Because the Pilgrims were more concerned with how people live as church for one another than the direct measure of their belief, they lived for most of their years without a creed. Now, I need to admit and back up a second so I don't seem like a Pilgrim and Puritan cheerleader, that the Puritans were, you know, pretty puritanical. These were not loosey-goosey, feel-good folks who didn't care what you believed. There was an expectation that life was to be lived in a very specific way, that deviation from expectation meant expulsion, punishment, and, oh yes, damnation. This was not feel-good religion, but neither was it creedal religion. Faith was made known by a conversion experience and a commitment to the people, not a creedal test. And my colleague Jocko Tinhove says that the Pilgrims also paved the road not just for democracy, but for religious diversity. And they did it quite in spite of themselves. He says, note, these first informative Anglo-Americans organized themselves not around what they worshipped or believed, but how they agreed to be together. By not dictating specific beliefs, It allowed room for new ideas to prosper. This was decidedly not what the Puritans had in mind. But it is what they got. In spite of themselves, they paved the way for the plurality and diversity of the American religious experience because they believed that people should be together based on a mutually agreed upon covenant. Diversity was their unexpected child. They said that they would walk together in all ways that the Lord made known or to be known, according to us and according to our best endeavors. But they didn't bargain on the fact that the ways of the Lord would be made known in ways like this. They didn't bargain on the fact that the ways of the Lord would be made known differently by different people in different ways, and that those people would still feel obligated to walk together in the best ways they knew how. They gave us the gift of covenant. And yet their covenant, both spoken and unspoken, was a very limited one. You know, not everybody could get in that group. To the pilgrims and to the larger group of Puritans, the covenant didn't hold for a whole lot of people. It didn't hold for Native Americans. It didn't hold for people who even had minor deviations of prescribed Christian practice. It didn't hold for women and men found guilty of witchcraft, and after all, not only is the First Parish of Plymouth a Unitarian Universalist church, so is the First Parish of Salem. Those pilgrims brought with them to these shores both Congregationalism and Covenant. They set in motion all these forces that would create democracy and diversity, but they also brought sectarianism and divisiveness that we've never wholly lost either. They gave us the dark DNA of self-righteous exclusion of those who are not us. They, our parents, taught religious groups in America, including us, to look at other groups with suspicion and contempt, and to insulate ourselves among those we deem to be our own people. And here is where we meet our challenge, both as a congregation and as individuals. In American religion, we face our dualities once again. Sure, we love freedom, as long as people are free to live and love and practice their faith in ways very similar to ours. Sure, we love diversity, as long as we're still in charge. Sure, we love difference of opinion, as long as in the end, everyone finally admits we were right all along. This exclusivist, splintering strain of American religion convinced the pilgrims that the Native Americans had only one option, conversion. Later it convinced Protestant establishments that all Catholics were communists. It convinced ever-varying groups in the Christian tradition to cut each other out of shared communion. And it causes some of us, Unitarian Universalists, as wonderful as we are, to mistakenly believe that all other religious folks in the world who are in any way reasonable would be better off if they just came out of the closet and admitted they were Unitarian Universalists after all. That's not a good thing. And so we have America today, a combination of diversity and exclusion, creativity and control, sectarianism and social justice. In our own lives, we have a combination of freedom and suspicion, open-mindedness and judgment, expansive hearts and rather closed minds. Individually, we covenant with the people in our lives, with our families, and with one another. We companion with one another along the journey. But to live out the best of what our pilgrim parents gave us and go ahead and leave the worst, we have a challenge to ask ourselves some really hard questions. Who are we in our lives and in our congregation cutting out of our covenant? Who do we fail to see as a part of the beloved community? Who do we fail to let into our circle? If we love freedom and we love diversity, those great gifts of the pilgrim tradition, we must work to do better than our forebears did. We must imagine what they couldn't. That we ourselves are not just naturally more right, more perfect, or more pure than everyone else. We must imagine a covenant that's broader than they could ever have dreamed of. We can be what they could not be. We could take congregationalism and democracy, take creedlessness and diversity, and see them as the great challenges they are, and look at the people whom we are tempted to write off and say, what the hell, you are in my covenant too. To the neighbor who's always trying to convert you to their way of thinking, you are in my covenant too. To the kid on your son's baseball team who always seems to want to play second base, you are in my covenant too. To immigrants, to minorities, to those who are hurting, to the impoverished of this world, you are in my covenant too. To George W. Bush, you are in my covenant too. A covenant people, challenging each other to work toward a common goal, a way of being, no matter what. Connected in freedom to one another and to those outside our doors, that is what we Unitarian Universalists could be. We can be more than a small group of people who's absolutely certain we're right. We can be more than our forebears could be. Let us not become our parents. Let us become the best of what our parents could have been. Let us not assume that American religion, including ours, must be mired in exclusive sectarianism and backpatting. Let us assume rather that there are second chances and third chances and tenth chances at walking together in truly diverse ways. Who is it that is invited to walk together with you in your life? Who is out, who is in? Who is invited into covenant here, who is not? Let us believe in second chances. Believe that though they could not be all they were called to be, we can begin again. And with stumbling footsteps, we can make an effort to walk together, whatever the cost. Amen.